Hi everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and I'm super excited to be joined by Chris Ramsden today. Now, before I introduce Chris and we get into the podcast, if you could do a huge favor, I would love you to go over to the platform that you listen to the podcast on, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review. And that'll help us reach more listeners and hopefully have a positive impact on more, particularly educators as well. So that'd be amazing. And also coming very soon is Wellbeing Wizard, which is a AI tool which is designed to help teachers, particularly saving a lot of time and focusing on wellbeing. Now that could be wellbeing lessons, wellbeing games, personalized learning plans for students, curriculum plans. It can create Pixar-style videos to teach the lessons. It's a fantastic tool. Really excited about it. We're actually going through the testing process of the moment, and it's not too far until we'll be rolling it out. So that's something to look out for. But today is about Chris. Now, I've known Chris for probably 10 or 11 years now. Chris is a educator, but he more recently, or not recently, but for quite a long time now, he's the game-based learning consultant at Axilium Australia. Now, that is special. Axilium specializes in developing thinking and life skills for learners and educators. So it's a game-based platform where it's about teaching thinking skills, but also teaching young people in particular how to think. And I think that's one of the really important things because that's one thing that I always wondered when I was like in my 20s about, well, how do we actually get taught to think? And I never got taught how to think about things, if that makes sense. But the great thing about Chris's platform, that's what it's designed to do. It covers a whole lot of different games, featuring games specifically on well-being principles like resilience or empathy and things like that, and to other areas as well that is designed to improve skill development and practice that also. Now, Chris is from the UK. He came over a long time ago, and we'll share his story in a minute. But I love Chris's journey. He's very passionate about what he does. He's an educator. He was a teacher for, well, decades, and then into Axilium. So I'm really excited for today's conversation. And without further ado, we'll get into the episode. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ash. Great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. We've known each other for quite some time now. First meeting at Emmanuel, where you were at the college and I was at the primary school, but we did cross over in offices and got to know you there, but also got to know what you were doing with Axilium and some of the other things that you were doing in education as well, which I really loved and really loved following your journey, particularly over the last 10 years since I have known you, but I know that it dates back a long time before that. So
Indeed.
if
Indeed.
you can give us a bit about your background and how you got into education and how Axilium came about.
Sure. So I was basically, obviously, you pick up from the accent, I come from the UK. So basically, in 1989, I did my postgraduate in education, having done a degree in sports and education, sports and social management. I then spent a year traveling Australia and New Zealand, and that was my first love, if you like, which was piqued by my Ashes love, the cricket that I love. So I wanted to come across an experience, basically in a wonderful place. So I had a wonderful year. I went back and after that and did a few different jobs. I worked in wine merchants. I worked in printing. But none of them were really floating my boat, and I knew that one of my main loves was sport, was physical education. Certainly going through school myself, so I actually went back and did my postgrad in 1989, and started teaching in 1990 in an inner city school in a place called Rotherham, which is a satellite town, if you like, of a place called Sheffield up in the north of England. I worked there for 10 stroke 11 years. I was head of PE for straight away, basically boys PE straight away in my first job, and after 3 years I became head of upper school in an 11 to 16 school. 1999 I did a 1 year teaching exchange with my wife. My wife's sister had married an Aussie guy over here, so Yeah, beautiful opportunity for us to come and have a look and test the waters. I did that in a wonderful place called Ulla Dulla on the New South Wales south coast. Fell in love with the place once again, as did my wife. So we went back to England as we had to do, and then we came over here to Adelaide, which is where my wife's sister was living. I started there, therefore, at Emmanuel, where we first met. Moved on to Scotch College for a few years as head of PE and head of house there. And then I had a little frustrations. I was having frustrations as a head of house and kids coming to me in year 12 in particular, seemingly not thinking, wanting me to do the thinking for them, it really seemed. And their parents would pop up at parents' evening and well and say, yeah, you do the thinking for them, please. And I'm going, this is not education. So I took a year out to find myself, if you like, to find something that was going to push my buttons. And towards the end of that year, at the end of 2006, that was, I discovered a methodology called MindLab, which is the forerunner of Accelium, which used hands-on games as a tool to teach cognitive, social, emotional, and ethical skills. I just thought, wow, this is just a marvelous extension of what I've been doing for the last 10, 11 years of my life, well, 16 years of my life at that point, as a physical education teacher, and the capacity to be able to go to the cognitive. Don't get me wrong, we all know that cognitive is much in use in PE as well, but to actually that different string to the bow, if you like. And I recognized in this methodology that they were teaching a toolkit of models and metacognitive strategies which would actually help the kids when they got to year 12. They would have that toolkit that they could fall back on rather than just looking at me agog and saying, what do I do? I don't know how to do it. So that's basically what I did. So I went across there. Went to Israel, which is where it originates, was started by two chess masters in 1994. So they were educators. They basically did their degrees, were teaching chess to kids and struggling with some of the concepts that they were teaching. And they went back to uni and they basically built a curriculum around games that they discovered kids loved. Games which kids weren't particularly used to, hadn't particularly seen, and they built the curriculum around that, looking at those cognitive skills, those social skills, those emotional skills, those ethical skills. This was like music to my ears. So, as I say, I went over, trained myself up, and came back and crazily resigned, would you believe, and started my journey with MindLab, which, as I say, is the forerunner to Accelium. So Accelium came to be around about 7 to 8 years ago, which was a recognition by the company that in terms of getting to more kids, moving into a digital platform situation with the games was going to be much, much more accessible for teachers. Don't get me wrong, MindLab is ever, ever so rich in terms of its delivery and the fact that you're face-to-face with kids and playing, but Accelium becomes much more easy, if you like, for a teacher to actually put in place, with the added bonus that in the background, and we were a forerunner here as well, I guess, to a certain extent. Machine learning and artificial intelligence in the background is populating various different reports that we can bring to the fore around skills such as critical thinking, creative thinking, resilience, basically analytical thinking and aspects like that. So things which are really always very hard to actually prove to be tangible. And when I did MindLab, people would always say to me, where's the evidence? And I'd say, well, the evidence is anecdotal, as it often is with a lot of what we do in this area.
Yep.
But now we can actually provide a little bit of tangible knowledge in the background as well, because we're actually looking and watching and assessing things as they go along. How's that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fantastic description, mate. And it's been a fantastic journey, like over what, 30, well, more than 35 years probably coming up to since you've been in education. And obviously... Sorry, mate.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would have believed it when we go in there as those bright-eyed young teachers that we get to this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. What I love is that you found or something that you're really passionate about and then you ran with it. And I guess you've been champion game-based learning, and I'm totally with you on that. I think game-based learning is such an important thing, and both of us having PE teaching backgrounds, and one of the things I noticed is not so much online but in games in general – like in PE, they love them. That's when they're most engaged, they're probably learning the most. And you've taken that and I guess championed it, as I said, into learning for development in higher order thinking, character strengths, and social emotional skills. So how do games support student wellbeing and flourishing in classrooms, do you think? What's your view on that?
Yeah, absolutely with you, mate. So games are just wonderful, and not just for kids, for adults as well. There's nothing I love more than to get out and do things myself. And I don't think that should ever go away. But unfortunately, we tend to cram that curriculum and not let these things be taught as we go through. I think it's really important as well for me to stress here that the game is our tool of choice. And behind that tool of choice is a very robust methodology and pedagogy, which is really helping to develop that those well-being characteristics which you talked about. So it's not just that the game itself per se is going to do it. It's actually building into it some scientific background, if you like, which aligns with the science of learning. But having said that, you can pick up a game, and as long as you're using that game in a good way, then you're going to get some good outcomes. If all you're doing is throwing it in front of them and saying, there you go, you finish your work, play a game, then I think that's kind of wasting the opportunity. What about games? Just create a safe environment for learning. They can make mistakes. They can basically challenge themselves. They can push themselves beyond the bounds, if you like, without the fear that anything is going to happen. And that in itself reduces that risk of failure, which kids often feel a little bit too much in this day and age. And they promote really intrinsic motivation, basically to be able to play where mistakes, they're engaged, they're curious, and they're really in control of their own learning, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
Yeah. And beyond that, of course, as PE teachers, we know that there's collaboration, there's communication, there's teamwork, all strengthening both relationships with their peers, but also with the educator.
Yep.
And so I've got such wonderful relationships, as I'm sure you have, with kids that we've taught. On my social media, most of the people on my social media are kids I taught back in the UK, which is really incredible, so many years on. So it's just the power of relationships, if you like, that can be formed with things like games. Not just games, of course, dance, drama, music, anything that people actually possess a passion for. And really, they act as mirrors. Games are like little microcosms of life, I believe. And they can reveal character strengths. And I've got a number of schools here that actually work specifically with what I do to actually promote character strengths. So things like resilience, things like patience, empathy, and courage. Yeah, and we're encouraging that growth mindset continuum, if you like, where those kids can learn persistence, strategy, and they can adapt their work as they go through things. So I really think there's a whole gamut of things that can come through, if you like, from game-based learning. But I want to really stress that I feel, don't just throw a game in front of them, make sure you know where you're going with them. So we have three principles, if you like, in terms of what we do and how we work. So we will, I say three, but there's a little earlier stage first. So all lessons have a provocation, as they should, to set the scene for what we're going to be doing and where we're going to be going. But then we'll play. And then we'll learn a metacognitive model or strategy. And then we will transfer that to either their schoolwork or something that's happening in their real life. So we play, we learn, and we apply and make it a habit. And I think they're really important things in this day and age for kids to be able to take hold of and run with when they're developing and flourishing in the classroom. There's nothing better, as you would know again, than seeing the kids and trying to get the kids to stop playing because they're in such a state of flow. And it's just really, really wonderful to observe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had the pleasure of having a look inside the Excellium platform. And with some of those games that you're talking about, there's actually games that are specifically designed for different areas, aren't there? Like, for example, you mentioned resilience and empathy.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there are games in there that are designed to improve those skills, aren't they? Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we've got a mixture of games. So we've actually taken a number of commercial games, which we'd used before, which people didn't particularly know, and have actually put them into the actual platform positions. We've also created games as well as a company, which have actually developed and focused on particular things like, let's shall we say, resilience, as you say. We have one of the models which we use is called the Alpinist model, the Alpinist method, which is looking at basically, if you think about the metaphor of the Alpinist, the climber, who basically is climbing Mount Everest, say, and they get to a certain level and they've actually used up all of their resources, their oxygen, their strength, etc. And do they push on? No, they don't. They pause, and often they'll actually come back a little bit and actually camp down the night to build their strengths up again, to be able to go again the next day. So it's aligned, if you like, to the bounce back situation, but they're bouncing back better. Rather than if they tried to continue to the summit of Mount Everest in one day, they're going to fall, but fall in a big heap. So a lot of what we do is based around metaphor, which make things really, really easy for the kids to understand, but then use and take and transfer to other aspects of their life. So it even though I work with schools in full, I often want schools to say, and even university professors, we've got university professors in school, in universities overseas, who are just taking a game, one game, and using that to actually help them exemplify something that they're teaching. So if I can make a game available to one teacher, just one game, I'm happy with that too. I'm not about saying it has to be everything full in. I'm about saying, what do you want? How can I make things easier for you and help you to engage your students in what you're doing?
Brilliant. Yeah, really love that. And I guess just building on from what you mentioned before about metacognition and I guess transferring those skills. So obviously, metacognition and transference is at the heart of what you do or what you teach. How can helping teachers, and you mentioned this, sorry, not teachers, students, but you mentioned this at the start when you mentioned talking about the year 12s, pretty much getting you to do the thinking or wanted you to do the thinking. So how can helping students think about their thinking contribute to a more resilient and self-aware learner, do you think?
Well, I think thinking is often invisible, as we know. So to make it explicit, I think it really helps students develop a deeper cognitive awareness. Yeah. So analytical skills and independent learning strategies are something that we can really focus on and work to bring them through. And when they can actually see their own thought processes, then they can refine their reasoning, they can make better decisions, and they can apply their learning more effectively. So we're building an awareness, if you like, of habits of mind, creating habits that stick, that would then, when they get put under pressure, for example, they go, I remember we did that in that situation. And that's what I encourage teachers to do. This is not something that should be taken in isolation. This is about basically interdisciplinary work where we can actually take what we're doing with Accelium, not bolt on. This is something you can sit inside a lesson and basically say, okay, the language of thinking which we're building here is something which we can take and use in this aspect of our curriculum, in this aspect of our life. And then the more we rehearse it and the more we practice it, then the more we get an understanding of the thought processes that are going on.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I guess also we ensure that learning doesn't just stop with the game.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. We are really developing those highly transferable skills that they can apply across subjects in problem solving. And they're obviously the ultimate aim in navigating real world challenges.
Absolutely. And I love how you said practice them, because that's what it's about. It's about providing, well, this tool particularly is about providing students with the opportunity to practice like their thinking or thinking about their thinking, if you like. It's a bit
absolutely
hard to
absolutely
say that, but yeah, it's that's what I love about it. Like, it's providing those opportunities. And I guess just building on from that, like, you've witnessed lots of students go through Accelium and experience success. So what is playing, or particularly playing those different types of games, but what are some of those, can you think of some examples that stand out where maybe students have had some breakthroughs that you've seen that I guess have surprised themselves, but maybe surprised you as well?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So always, I mean, the teachers are the best people for me for this perspective to really, they can see such a different side to so many kids. Once they see that they can actually process things. So a lot of kids have got issues and difficulties processing things in this day and age. The game's a great leveler, and is able to really make situations be available to the kids in a way where they are not pressured, and they're able to then really find their way through it. So I've had so many success stories reported to me. Ones I can go back on in terms of before Accelium with the hands-on stuff. We run a competition where we used to take kids overseas to compete against other countries. And some of the kids we've taken over there, basically the actual teachers just described as saying, how on earth have they got to this level? You know, because they had so many learning difficulties so many problems in terms of their learning, and they overcame them and were able to actually get great success, which in turn therefore gives them that self-confidence to all of a sudden move forward and progress and take them forward in their holistic learning, if you like. And that's basically been mirrored all the way through everything I do. So when I talked to you earlier about the fact that how do you prove what you're doing? Well, it's always been difficult. But those stories that the teachers share with you are just gold. So even until last year, I had a school which came on board last year, and at the end of the year, how do you measure impact, Chris? So I got some photos from this school of the kids where they'd been asked to, in their own way, create memories, if you like, of what they'd really enjoyed in the school year. And these kids had baked aspects with the Axelium logo on it. They'd made Axelium logos in clay, and this teacher was just so enthusiastic about what they'd done. I mean, that's a kind of a little bit silly in some respects, but man, what so powerful for me and rewarding for me. But I mean, I've got other aspects. So basically, where students openly talking about their learning and discussing their strategies came from that same school. Yesterday, I was in a school out north where they talked about basically the kids actually really enjoying the struggle.
Oh yeah, interesting.
Can you believe that? So how many kids do you know that enjoy the struggle? So they're out there, but they were talking to me here about year three students working with the Axelium methodology and enjoying the struggle, feeling the tension, being in the learning pit, and then having those real eureka moments, those light bulb moments when they actually finally were able to get it and process it and connect the dots and transfer it into other areas. So one of the models and one of the methods we talk about, a strategy we talk about, is using anchors, anchor models within methods within one of the games. And we'll take that and we'll run with that in different aspects of learning, you know, where anchors are needed, where anchors are necessary. Looking at that that model and saying, okay, so what does an anchor do? It holds our thinking in place, and we can then move from that thinking. And they just talked about the way that they're actually using these anchors and talking about these anchors in everyday parlance, which to me, again, is music to my ears. Last year in a class, I was teaching a class as an exemplifying lesson, so I still got in there and do my work with the kids just like you do. Real powerful way for the teachers to see initially how it can be done. I taught this lesson, and this one girl was involved, enthusiastically discussing things, questioning things, asking questions, because that's really important to know as well, that our methodology is very, very verbal. Yep. So there's a lot of discussion. There's a lot of asking questions. So the game component is only about 15 minutes of a lesson, and the rest of it is all about everything else that we've talked about.
Yep.
And this girl was just all over it, absolutely all over it. And then after the lesson, the teacher came up to me and said, "You know, that girl has never spoken once before all year. She's got various issues in terms of her learning. That was just gold." Mm-hmm. And so I think those sorts of situations and experiences are happening all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do we reach everybody? Oh, absolutely. Are we a panacea for all ills? Of course not. There are kids that don't like a particular game. But as you said before, we have different games that we move through, and we call it a thinking journey. So they move through a journey of different games looking at different skills. And I don't know if you've picked up from the way we've moved. So once upon a time, I would say that potentially Mind Lab could have been looked at as bolt-on. But what we've really worked on in recent times is making our thinking journeys fit within a time period where they can fit within teachers' lesson planning and exemplify a teacher's lesson planning and look towards a STEM mentality.
Yep.
So we have lessons on learning strategies, mathematical thinking, scientific thinking, and flexible thinking for our VUCA world. And that runs throughout all of our thinking journeys. So that's how we've actually looked to do that as well.
Yeah, brilliant. And it sounds like, I think it's a great thing that you, like that, what you just mentioned then about making it part of that curriculum. So teacher is not I think you used the word bolt on. So it's not an extra thing they're doing. It's something that they can use in their curriculums and have it as part of what they're doing or maybe in STEM as the subject. They're getting their STEM practice through or lessons through the Axelium.
It's a STEM mentality as opposed to STEM itself. So,
yep.
Hang on. Say my internet's unstable. I hope it's okay.
No, I can hear you. Yeah, we're good.
So it's a STEM mentality, which we're looking at, those processes of thinking. So lots of school get lots of toys. But what's the process behind using those toys? You know, are we looking at their actual thinking processes? And I'm sure most schools are. but we are all over the concepts of actually helping them to actually put in place those thinking skills.
Brilliant. Chris, how does it work now? I know that you MindLab was a slightly different structure, as you mentioned before, it was more in person. So if schools are going to engage you, how does it look now? Do you go in and train the teachers? How does that work?
Yeah, so a number of ways. So, particularly if it's local, Adelaide, then I can go in and work with the teachers for sure. But nationally, very happy to jump on a plane and go out there and train teachers for sure. Equally, I can do it on Zoom. I have done it on Zoom. I've got a school that I work with in far north Queensland, Ingham State High School. I've been working with them now for 6 years. And up until 2.5 years ago, they'd not seen me in person. So yeah, we've done everything on Zoom. They love what they're getting with their kids. This is a public state high school in a pretty tough area. And they just absolutely love it, and are bouncing around with it each year. So equally, I'm very happy to come in and do taster lessons for schools so they can see exactly what this is all about. I'm open to anything really, if you like, in terms of how our school might want to actually have a look and say, Chris, could you come and do a day for us? Could you come and actually take us through a day's what a day looks like with Accelium in a school? So I go through different year groups, etc., and then I could even do things with the staff meeting after school and things like that. So I practice what I preach. I'm flexible. So we teach flexible thinking, so I'm flexible too to work with the needs of the school, if whatever those may be.
Brilliant. And yeah, I think it's a good way to be. It's always important to as you said, be flexible and fit in with the school and how they structure, because everyone's different. So all schools work differently. But that's brilliant. And Chris, I know I just want to ask your thoughts about this. So over your 30 plus years in education, what changes have you seen in how we support teacher and student wellbeing? And I guess, like, what excites you most about where positive education is heading? I know that obviously with the ceiling, there's thinking elements, but there's also well-being elements in there as well. So this might be an Asylum question partly, but also education in general.
Seen a few shifts, haven't we, in our time? And even my time as a kid. So if I think about my resilience when I was called to the headmaster's office to pay my dues for something I hadn't done,
What did you do?
then
Or what didn't you do? What was the reason for that?
this was a music lesson, and I put my satchel I had a little satchel in my school, and in public school in the UK. I put my satchel on my place, and I just went out to get something and came back, and someone had thrown my satchel on the floor. So I requested that they would explain to me why they'd done that, and we had a little discussion. And the music teacher came in and just wanted to give us a bit of a short, sharp fright. So she said, "Off you two go to the headmaster's office," knowing full well that the headmaster was out for the day. But the headmaster came back. No questions asked. In you come, boys. Bend over, and the cane was applied.
Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So I'm not sure how that would go in this day and age. I think we've got a very different world, and thank
We
goodness
do.
for that.
Yes,
Uh,
absolutely.
so, so I, again, I'll track back to the teachers I had. I had some great teachers who had relationships with me. But I had some teachers that didn't look to create relationships in the slightest. So I think now, even if it was back then, I think more so now, education is relational. Everything's about relationships. It's about the relationship you can build with your colleagues, the re relationship you can build with the kids that you're teaching, with the parents that you're teaching. And I think people have to work very, very hard at that. So if I think back to my life in 1990s as a teacher, there was not one lunchtime when I wasn't doing a school practice. There was not one night after school when I wasn't doing a school practice in some sport or other, and then Saturday morning sport. And kids, teachers ask me often, "How come you've got good relationships with the kids?" And my answer is, I spent time with the kids. And I know it's not as simplistic anymore. A lot of things going on and what have you, but that's just one big thing I really feel I've seen, that there's less. There's less desire to spend time over and beyond with the kids. That's something I just feel is happening out there. Not in all teachers, of course. That's a very big sweeping generalist statement.
Do you think that's because of maybe workloads have got higher, I'm not sure, higher workloads for teachers, and therefore they are trying to get those things done, and therefore, I guess one of the things that is missing is those relationships with students. I know that that's not for everyone, but maybe that's for some teachers,
No,
isn't it?
I think you're spot on. I mean, I think we've got to look at the education system. You know, basically, we've got too much teaching to the demands of outside agencies. You know, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. You know, we've got to teach to the test. You know, come on, come on. Let's teach to the kid. Let's be holistic. Let's think about those kids that we're developing. If you want to talk about kids today and how they have. Oh, what do we say? We say they've got less resilience. They've got less this. They've got less that. They've got less this. Why wouldn't they have less if we're just teaching them the way we, not teaching them. Sorry, not teaching them, but we're forcing them to be basically bottles that are filled. You know, and that's what I was. I was a bottle to be filled, but now they seem to have more things to fill the bottle with, rather than actually really, basically looking at and I'm actually talking wrong here. The actual fact of the matter is now we have a movement which is moving and changing things for the better. So the positive education, the well-being, all these aspects are really, really so powerful, so positive in our changing education for the better, in my view.
Yep, absolutely. And I think, like talking about those relationships with the students, sometimes it can just be that one in the yard as well as you're walking past a student, like just asking them. One thing that I can't remember where I got this from, but maybe I don't know how it developed, but just asking students when they walk through, just finding out about something about a student. Maybe they play like netball or basketball or football, and just asking about, oh, how'd your game went, how'd your game go? So just building that connection with them, knowing something about them, and then asking something relevant to them that's going to get, I guess, a response that, oh, he remembers that I play basketball. And that just made a difference. And that's easy to do because you're just walking through a yard and like seeing little Johnny over there. Johnny, how'd you go on footy on Saturday? Runs over, tells you about it.
I think at the end of the day, all a kid wants to know is that you care. Is that you care about them and their development, and good teachers do that quite naturally. And it's but you're right, the actual workload that the teachers are under in this day and age is incredible. And what I do
Totally
is I do a
agree.
little bit of relief teaching as well along the way, for a couple of reasons. Number one, to keep my education qualification relevant. A little bit of extra spending money, but also, to keep myself grounded on what's going on in the actual school environment, what's going on, what teachers are facing, so that when I actually walk in and start to talk to them about Axelium and training, etc., I'm actually talking from experience rather than who is this guy, when was he last in a classroom, etc. So I'll tend to do 2 or 3 days of relief teaching where, if you haven't got good relationship skills, you're gonna go under. You know, so you walk into a classroom where you've got kids who potentially don't want to be there. You've got a lesson which is typically following on from something else, so you don't have the knowledge but necessarily about what's gone before. Your relationship skills, the ability to talk with those kids about life, about things in general, is absolutely paramount to your success and survival as a TRT teacher.
Absolutely. That's so true. It can be a challenging role at times. Teaching in general, but being a relief teacher or a TRT teacher, or I know different states use different terminologies for it, but you're 100% right. Like just building those relationships is so crucial. But it puts you, I think, if you're having like creating those relationships, having positive conversation with students, puts you in a good mood. You're having positive conversations as or good conversations. Don't have to always be positive, but like quality conversations with people. That puts you, I guess, in a good space. It co builds that confidence. Builds that connection, and I guess in a way a bit of a culture as well. Because I think culture, interesting word. Like I always think about culture, and it's an interesting one. And I think it's that daily cultures are daily actions that happen at a school, I reckon. In this case, a school. Well, those things that happen on a regular basis, those things that ingrain that do happen, rather than oh, we got a great culture at the school, which is a good word, but it's action that makes the difference.
Absolutely. If you don't take action, then unfortunately things don't work. That's down to going out and exercising yourself. If I don't take action, then I'm going to lose my ability to move. So it's just as simple as that.
Yeah, 100%. And
You did ask me about the Accelium thoughts as well.
yeah.
So in terms of the future, what we're working really, really hard on is the incorporation of AI in a particular way. So the AI we're using within our, so we do various different assessments. So some which are basically aimed at the junior level, middle school level, but we've got a few assessments as well, which I pitch at the careers year 10, 11, year 12 situation, looking at strengths. And we've got the AI, which can now actually interrogate the data. So a teacher could ask questions about various aspects of which student is really performing well with analytical thinking as opposed to flexible thinking, et cetera.
Got you.
But beyond that, we're looking at and moving and working hard on how we can actually make those thinking journeys individualized for each kid so that the actual kid is getting the mediation, if you like, so that the teacher role to a certain degree supported by the AI within the game and the journey. So as they're going through, they could be struggling with something and they can ask the AI something and the AI will not give them the answer. It will coach them and tease out of them better ways of thinking. So we're going down that a little bit like some of the things that's happened with the Khan Academy, where they've been doing that sort of thing as well. They're moving in that direction. So very exciting in terms of use of AI. AI for
Brilliant.
good, I call it. So we've got
Yeah,
to be very
absolutely.
careful about that. Yeah.
It's definitely I big O the AI at the moment, and I think we caught up the other day and I mentioned about the wellbeing wizard, which is about to be
Yeah.
tested by some students, but it, sorry, teachers, but yeah, it's such a powerful thing that can certainly be used for good and hopefully help teachers, but also in turn help students as well. So yeah, there's a lot of good for it, if it is used in the right way. And Chris, we had a great conversation. I love always love talking to you, but learn a lot today. Hopefully people have taken some things away that they can apply, but also thinking about maybe perhaps using Accelium platform and engaging with you. So where can people find out a bit more about Accelium, and where can they reach you?
Sure. So my website is accelium.com.au. Just gone overgone an overhaul. I've actually taken control of it to make it much more Australianized, where you can find various links in particular to things like science of learning, to the general capabilities, etc. And my email address is chris@accelium.com.au. Accelium spelt accelium.com.au. I'm on the usual socials. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook and X, I think it's called. Not that I'd spend a lot of time in these areas. LinkedIn's probably where I would spend most of my time. So please feel free to connect with me on there and let's have a chat. Honestly,
Absolutely.
please, I'm ha very happy to jump on and do webinars and give people an overview, because this type of methodology, you can't really read about it. You need to actually understand it, tangibly see, be a part of it, you know, and I can facilitate that over a Zoom meeting for 1, 2, 3, 20 a class even as well. So very happy to engage with people. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Think
And
that
we'll put
covers it.
those links in the show notes as well, so people can just click on those and yeah, reach out to Chris and have a look at the website. But no, I really appreciate your time today, Chris, and thanks for being on the podcast.
Excellent, Ash. Thank you very much for having me.
Pleasure.